Benjamin.
Yeah.
Can you do me a big favor?
Sure.
Can you just go and play a little song?
Yeah. Let me just put the coffee on.
Your goddamn coffee, huh?
What's your
day? Hmm? This guy?
No. Piano, a little drums, a little mostly guitar, and I sing.
Okay.
So. The piano?
Huh?
Okay,
I'm gonna do an introduction now. It's on, and then I'm gonna sit with you.
Huh?
That depends on you, Sir Kim. All right, I gotta stand over here. That's right, folks. It's been a little while that I've had an interesting conversation with a human being of ours that has been on this show many, many times. That's right. In this episode of the Weird Wizards Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, episode 12. I am sitting here with our main man, our only one and man, Kim Hoggensey. Kim, give it up, man, Benjamin in the house too. Benjamin playing piano. Woo-hoo! Goddamn right.
What's happening, Kim? You all right, buddy?
I'm good.
And that's right, folks. On the piano, we got Benjamin, as usual. This week's intro and opener musician, DJ man.
Benjamin, give it a little holler.
Holler! Holler back. Okay, let's, I guess, sit down and get right straight into it. This is great. Thank you, Benjamin.
Yeah,
and
that's the best music intro I had so far.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I did one with Toby, but that one was just like a complete mind conundrum. It's good. Wow, back in the old studios. God damn, dude, good job with the fucking carpets. We're gonna set up the wall. We're gonna. Did I tell you the story? Oh, look at you, Kim. Hey, Benjamin. Do you think we can set up the camera and get this episode 12, the first episode, on camera? That would be the first Weird Wizard episode where we have both mediums happening at once. Hey! Right, folks, let me put the volume down. I just saw that peak. I hope by now everything's... Okay, this is perfect. Okay, that's nice. That's nice. Right. Get a little bit more like this, and we're ready to go. And I guess, like, by the end of it, what I can do is just, like, cut out. No, I don't need to do that.
Do whatever you want.
Look at you. I was going to explain to people how you look. I'll explain, because they don't see you, and I don't know if the camera's going to
Well, I have, like, a big, fluffy carpet, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty carpet-looking thing. It's not really a...
It looks almost like a bear skin.
Yeah, like you skinned two of, like, a Siamese twin bear.
Short hair.
Definitely. Bear. Definitely
brown
short hair.
Bear.
Groom bear.
Yeah.
Wow.
With speed stripes in the fur. See that? Some Ronaldo kind of hair. Speed stripes.
I like it. It looks very cozy. I'm just sitting on the chair. You look like it looks like we're in a therapy session. You're like very relaxed, and I'm just like very on the edge. Okay, this is happening. Look at that, Kim.
Yeah. Now we're rolling. I need you to clap.
Okay.
That's good enough.
Good enough, huh?
Yeah.
Folks,
now we can sync it up.
Oh shit, folks. This is amazing. Weird Wizard Podcast. We did a piano introduction. It's gonna be black. All the way to about now. Hello, everybody. You've probably never seen me like this before. You've only heard my voice, but this is who I actually am. A goddamn pioneer-looking human being. And look, I got another cool-looking pioneer-looking person. And the third wise man is right behind you, Benjamin.
Hello.
Welcome to the first episode of Weird Wizards Visuals Podcast Video Bang with Kim Hoggensey as usual. God damn, Kim, I want to tell you a story. This place, by the way, folks, was going to be the place that the studio was going to be at. But Kim, you know what happened to the studio?
No.
A bunch of debt collectors. I bought some equipment. equipment. I bought some equipment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The microphones, you remember those?
Yeah.
Okay. So I ended up in debt with some people. And obviously they were not governmental people, so...
They, really?
No, not at all.
So they came and got it?
Yeah, as a deposit. So it's as a deposit for now. So all I have to do is pay...
That was actually how I lost my car, but that was governmental people.
Okay, well, great. Great for you. At least...
things like that happen. No,
okay. You mean the legal criminals?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the downside with legal criminals is that, like, you can't really...
You're fucked.
Yeah, you're kind of fucked for good, but with illegal criminals, you can sort of have a little bargaining happening, and you, because it's a human to human, it's a different... So I was
able
much
to convince, more open-minded in the criminal
much more
world.
Open-minded.
Just
I was able to convince mine to keep my shit. Like, hey, yo, I'm going to come back for it. So Weird Wizard hosts... Weird Wizard peoples and audience members... Just see this room right now. This is gonna be the future. Once I pay those people that are kind of gnarly back their money, this is gonna be the studio.
The moral of the story is that you can trust criminals.
Pretty much, man. You can trust criminals.
You have a dialogue with them.
You have an easy time
like
with
you can trust your local government.
Yeah, so
yeah, I wouldn't say criminals, man. This is bad vibes. I'm not gonna say criminals per se, but hey. What else can we call it? There's only two sides to it. Right.
Independence.
Yeah. So that's the story of me and what has been happening to me. And
well, you've been to the States.
I've been to America.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, that was a very... I should say mind-revealing experience, especially the cannabis industry. I went to the cannabis convention in Las Vegas, and seeing the American market, because look, we have law, right?
Yeah.
And legalizing, like Amsterdam, they legalized it, but then there's the market, which is a totally different ballgame.
Yeah.
And you go to America, which is capitalism, people are competing, it's a fucking different ball game. How they combine cannabis, how they extract it, how they like maneuver and like sort of distribute it. And it's
smoke
like,
it,
dude.
Wait,
smoking,
they do that too?
Yeah, like, pretty much. Bam. Like, there's not that many people who smoke joints, or like there is. I'm not gonna bullshit. I don't know what's going on there, but it just seemed to me more people were like mostly it depends. Okay. But then it's just tinctures and oils and fucking edibles and sprays and creams, and I said that already.
Yeah, but you were there for a month. So you didn't want, you were not on the fair for a month.
What do you say?
You were not on the cannabis fair for a month.
No, not the cannabis fair, but I did work, like there was a work, it was like I went to travel, like pleasure and business at the same time thing, which was... A lot of like pleasurable moments, but a lot of work too. So we went like all from Los Angeles, all through Nevada, so Vegas, and then up to Reno, through Reno, and through Mount Shasta, and all the way back to North California, and then just like down. We even went to Humboldt County. You know the Murray Mountain?
No.
Murray Mountain. We watch it on Netflix. It's the fucking. Emerald Triangle, where like all the weeds are growing in Oregon and they kill people.
Actually, I have a friend
messing.
Who runs a business there.
Okay.
On
really?
Mountain, yeah.
What? I'm putting snus in my mouth on camera so you can see what we just like.
Shit. Yeah.
And by the way, that's what they're doing there too. They're making cannabis snus, which they're going to aim towards here once it becomes legal. And that was the market. I was just like, holy shit, that was the biggest thing I got from America. So it was good. It was amazing, and I was happy that I went to America because that was the biggest thing I wanted to do, my dream in a way, and that happened after Wooly died. So I thank him for that, and I got a tattoo. Everybody, look at that! I got a tattoo, and the story is that I woke up the next day after I got the tattoo, and I realized that I got the date wrong. It's not 1221; it's 2112. So that's the story. I got a tattoo and I realized I got the date of the death of my friend wrong.
Kind of funny story though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a little bit for everybody else, not for me. But, I mean, can you show your finger to the people of the peoples of the weird wizard? God damn right, man. That's another bad move. That's another badass move.
But hey. I didn't wake up the day after like, oh, I did this wrong.
Yeah, thank God. That would have been a little bit intense. Oh, shit. Oh. Okay, so... I heard just lately that Andreas and Emil left.
Well, Emil is on sick leave and Andreas left. Yeah.
Okay, so explain. Can you explain first? Because how was the structure? Before.
So I started a company.
Okay.
So with my brother, Sindre.
Right.
So we were 50-50 in ownership.
Alright.
And then we have given out shares and sold shares to investors and team members.
Right.
So it kind of like been, we have been watering out. So everybody in the core team has shares.
Okay, so how did Andreas and Emil, because Andreas and Emil, are they were also like co-owners or co-
Emil, he was the first investor in
okay.
the company. So he's an investor. And he has shares also from working here over years. Andreas was supposed to get shares.
Okay.
And he got them right before he quit. Yeah.
Okay. So
I don't know how that will work out, but it will naturally find its way.
Okay. So I mean, like, I don't know if you want to get into detail about how it is or what it was or how it went to part.
Well, I don't know so much actually, and it's after all a business issue.
Okay, so it was a business issue.
No, after all, like, they worked in the company and Andreas left the company. So
okay.
It's, and I'm owner of the company, employer, and so many roles there.
Yeah, so how's it been after that? How's it been after
We haven't talked so much. So,
okay.
Again, like, I don't really know how much, what's, we talk a little bit. But I think Andreas mostly was like he just wanted to move on, do something for himself.
Okay.
That was at least how we communicated it to me.
So how was it like? I guess like when he came and spoke with you and told you, how did you feel in that moment? Like in that moment?
No, it was a special
like,
moment
news.
Because. But again, it comes into so many parts because Emil, this was the day that I told Emil to do a sick leave or go to the doctor.
What happened there was okay if I ask?
Well, he just said like he was so tired and so jaded and I understand him. Like he has worked
okay.
so hard and so well and so on. So... That day when Emil said that, Andreas also shared that he had like lost his belief in the company. So it came in a very strange time.
Both at the same time, or
no? It was just an Emil thing, but that was the time when Andreas shared his feelings.
Right.
And. So I just acknowledged that. I said, okay, thank you, and we need to talk about that at a proper time. Yes.
And what happened after that? Did you just kind of leave it behind you and just do your thing, or did it kind of hit you?
Honestly, I've been feeling like a silent witness in the whole situation
okay.
because I've been so central, but I haven't, and I feel like in many ways fingers are pointing on me in many ways, but... I haven't heard anything, and I don't feel any fingers pointing at me, and I don't feel any reason for that. So in that way, I just feel older, more experienced, and I feel like I just relive a pattern that I've seen before. And instead of being so emotional moved by it, I understand it's not me.
All right, because that was my initially. I was going to ask you, how do you tackle all this? Because I guess, like, for me, because everybody tackles with problems, right? Mm. And it seems like the external problems are always happening. And like, I've seen, like, you're one of the people that I've met that always deals with like a high fluctuation external matter. And it's always my question, how do you tackle it? You seem fucking calm and brilliant, and you're sitting there.
Yeah, well, well.
So let's say, like, you were okay.
Yeah, so I tackle the every day. That's no harm. But in the same way, like, I feel like the professional work conflict, if it there have been one, because it hasn't been any clear communication. I don't look at that as my problem, anyway. Because if it was a problem, it's each and everyone's responsibility to come and address the problem.
Okay.
We are in a workplace. We are adults in the workplace. You know?
Right.
So that's the first. You can't say or act like you have a big problem and you don't dare to say what's the problem. You know, that's kind of like we don't get anywhere there. But in the same time, you just kind of like, of course, reflect on your own position, on your own input, how you act and how you treat other people and something like that. But I feel like I reflect from a more an older, a more sober, a more rooted Kim than I would 5 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
You know, I think this whole situation would be make me very angry a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would flipped out.
So was like I guess. How do you keep your calm in this situation? Is it just something that has developed over time by itself, or do you do techniques or something?
No, in this particular case, it's like when let's talk about entrepreneurship and doing building a team. You know, if someone stops believing in the company or in the idea or in the vision, they are invested in that belief set in a way. If they stop thinking about it, and they and it's hard for them to accept people still believing in it, because it's kind of a personal giving up. Also, you can almost feel shameful for, because you are the one that stopped believing or stopped doing it, you know. So in the situation we are now, in the fourth year of the company, it's kind of like a limbo state where some of the key members has left because they are jaded, tired, and two of them have stopped believing in the company or in the vision or what we're doing. So that can't affect me, of course, because they forget that won't affect me. I was there 2 years before before any of them started working in the company, and it's based on my dream and my vision. I won't let anyone break that for me. It was way harder the two first year where you were all alone, you know, trying to build something. And so
because you built it in a way with your brother, and then it was adjoining, and then it was sort of now it's partying, and now you're
We've grown all the way. We've done everything we said to be done. Like, what I can be held accountable for sure is that we have had a far slower pace than what I anticipated and what I preached, but so what? Who can blame me for that?
So was that what happened was that one of the things on the ass?
I'm really not sure, because to be fair to me, people have talked a lot amongst each other, and the most honest of my team member admits that some people are afraid of just talking to me. So,
what does that mean? Like, what do you mean by that?
They're afraid of talking about
to
me.
So what do you hypothesize?
I asked about why, and what I heard was because of some of them look at me as unpredictable, which is kind of true, or unpredictable. But then this exactly this thing of talking.
Mm.
I think I've shown quite a great consistency with each and every one of them.
So then, how did that didn't affect you emotionally when somebody told you that? Like they told you, okay, yo, this is, and a bunch of people don't want to talk to you.
No.
How did you tackle that in a sense? When you were told that.
I tackled it quite good, but it's because I do believe I have to be the best friend and leader towards them, you know, and honestly with an open heart and so on. So my anger and so on can be liberated by me just thinking about, I know that they will have their own new experience, you know, which will reflect the perspective of the experience they had in this company in a new way, and I know that will be in a better way, you know.
So like what were you calculating immediately after, I guess, like in the next few days or the next few weeks, how,
when it happened?
Yeah, so it happens, they said it, so now this is done. Now you're supposed to, I guess, like manage and maneuver and you just and be quick about it because you run a company, right?
I remember very well how I
reacted.
And I reacted the way I normally react on situations like that. It was the same after my divorce also, because it was so much happening, like it was like coming from just out of the blue, like just people were like...
Right.
That's the feeling. You know?
Right.
So I just was thinking like, okay, Kim, now you see you can't trust anyone and then other than yourself. You just have to do it yourself. And that's kind of like, when I say that loud, I understand that people can think that's unfair to hear. But I wasn't thinking like, shit, just now I can see I couldn't trust them. It's not that I'm talking about, but I had this idea, this vision, that if I gave enough with an open enough heart and mind, people would see me and understand me, you know. And that idea was crushed, and that was my own idea, you know.
Who crushed it? Was it you? It was you, sort of. Or
yeah,
it crushed
I crushed it when I saw that. So I kind of like. Just wrote off everyone from the company then. Just
right.
Like everyone in my mind, like unconscious mind. This
right.
is just, I'm just trying to tell you how what my mindset looked like then.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of just like cut loose then all ties, and just focusing on, okay, now all the weight on my shoulders, and that's kind of a befreeing situation because then I can just lose myself in the. Focus on the work.
So what was it like, I guess, like now that you're mentioning, was there, what are the pros and cons in this that has happened at this moment?
Well, it's like it has of course given me somewhat of a wake-up call, you know. I was very blinded by belief and my vision of just putting people in position and just giving them kind of like free responsibility or authority. And I see also how that can kill progress and learning processes in a way. Because in some times you kind of like almost hid away from each other in the workplace just to like, keep me alone, I'm doing nothing kind of
right.
situation, right?
So, but like... I guess, in a sense, communication.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, our situation is very special because no one has a salary. You know, no one has a steady income, admin income, you know. So what happens
right.
then is, like, all the things you do at work, you know, if you don't perform well or the company don't perform well, you don't get salary, you know. So as a team of a group of young, cool people who wants to come together, do business, and have all the freedom in the world to just lay back, we can't do that, but we also hurt ourselves, you know, because we understand we have responsibility for this business.
Mm.
So that make all the stress harder. So when we have then a liability on a high invoice, for example, some debt we have to pay, or debt like tax to the government or whatever, you know, it's kind of like it's all possessive in our head because it's our work which directly infect our salary bag, you know. So it's so many. And then also we have all the cleaning, which, you know, we run around and clean and clean and clean, and then so are supposed to come back and try to structure up and build up a company in a creative, laid back way, and some of us haven't had money for food, you know.
So how is it right now for you at this moment? Is that how it is?
Yeah, so now it's like the company is structured now that me and Tool is, like, all in all, we kind of like gone from a 7-man administration to a 2-man administration.
Okay.
And I don't want to take away anything that from Daniel, which is still here, but we just restructure. And Daniel also has been like really, really tired. So he's just been, now we just do cleaning and we take away the admin job for him.
So, and what about, because Fredrik as well?
He was the first who got the sick leave. That was in January.
Okay.
And that happened after the team had a meeting where we kind of like shared our goals and vision for ourselves, personal, and also for the company the coming year. And when it came to Fredrik, it was like, I'm just so jaded. I'm just thinking about all the work right now. So we just told him, like, I told him, like, you should go to the doctor and just, yeah.
Well, dude, from what I'm hearing right now, it seems like this burnout, right? And a big part, I've experienced burnout big time and just falling back and not being able to stand up and just having to do all over again. So that's what my experience is. And what you're saying is there's a lot, there was just like little physical, like sort of burnout. And it's, I guess, comes to this, to you. How do you feel in all this? How is your physical sort of being in this entire situation?
Well, so a year ago from, now in April, like March last year, February last year, I had like a real burnout, or like the team had a talk with me, like, what's going on, Kim? And like, I don't know, I'm so jaded, I'm so tired, and blah, blah, blah. So they said, like, okay, you take free for a while. I couldn't sick leave, I didn't have any salary to report, you know, so I couldn't get any money anyway. So I was just at home for 2 weeks, and when it started to get a little bit better, I started to go to work again. And then I built myself up slowly and painfully with cleaning and just small jobs anyway. And I haven't been like in really full trouble since this thing happening, like for real. So that was kind of like the hard thing for me also. Like, I feel in a normal job I would probably still be in sick leave anyway, you know, or a normal job I wouldn't go that far. You know, I would have a good mental and physical condition. But so I kind of like recognized the pattern right away with Fredrik when he shared how he felt in January. And I remember what I felt when I was like really burned out, like I just wanted someone to come and take me away from it all. You know, I want someone to come, like, because when people started asking me, like, okay, can you do this, can you do this, and I was like, no, just, you know, I wish someone came and put me in jail or in the hospital or home with mom or whatever, and just like, don't think about anything, just take care of yourself. And that was what I wished, you know, but there was no such person in a way. So that was all I could feel for Fredrik when he shared what he was.
So I guess, like, in a sense, because, like, I guess for people who don't quite know who you are, you created a startup that became the biggest startup in 2015 or 2016, right?
Well,
what's the story then? Because there's a big story about this startup, and for that reason, you go around and give speeches to people and big conventions and big meetings like Mesh and like that too. I don't even know what you exactly give presentations about, but I guess I assume in a sense, I have a question.
Yeah.
But first, go through this, and I'll ask you my question.
Well, to say we became biggest startup or was the biggest startup here is just show the shallow side of the entrepreneur scene, I think, because in that side you can be measured by scaling or investors' money or pitch prices won or how big you are or you know whatever. It's just vanity metrics. You don't mean anything. But we won a couple of prizes. We won like investor competition and we won like Telenor's best home service online, I think, or something like that. So we won like, and we got a lot of media attention. So maybe in that way we got like we were a lot in the media.
Right.
But I've been doing entrepreneurship for 15 years, you know. So when I came into Oslo starting Weekly, and it was like a boom in entrepreneurship scene.
So because you've done, this is your second company. It's not your first company.
This is my eighth company, maybe.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So you've done this for a very long time. You've been in the sort of entrepreneurship and making companies, starting things up. And so I guess like you've been through the ventures of trial and error and failure. And in this, at this time, I guess you're dealing with a lot of burnouts, which is like a very like strange situation because it's sort of out of people's control in a way. And now you're sitting here with this and there's the challenge. So A, what have you learned? And B, how would you like, let's say you're standing in a presentation right now and that's the main question. Well, Kim, how do you deal with burnouts? How do you deal with this situation when there's so many things happening, especially for people who do startups and they deal, come to these phases?
Well, it's it's so many different perspectives here, so it's so hard to answer, because if I were in one of my other companies where we had a say in a sustainable economy and we could like be run as a normal company, okay, listen here, do you like have talks with all the employees, how they are and so on, just be run as a normal company, just have a normal salary, just have like beige on Fridays or learning pills, you know. It's just, then we could be another way. But if I'm talking about burnouts and entrepreneurship and doing partnership and doing with your partners and who you should do it with, I learned a lot. And it's also reconfirmed what I believe in, what you should look for. Only reason why I kind of like holding my tongue is because I don't want to say anything that can be taken negatively about former
like,
partners or something.
Right, but like let's say sitting like, let's say like in a few months after everybody like Emil and Andreas have done their own thing, would you find it interesting to just sit down and just go through things you've learned and sort of the things you've gotten out of it? I would say like some time passes and you will reflect upon this and be like, okay, so now I understand something. I guess, have you sort of configured something out of this, like specifically that you can sort of give as a general advice to people who do startups? You know what I mean?
Well, of course, it's always interesting to sit and talk with people you've done business with before. And I know that it would be no problem talking with Andreas and Emil in the future because I have such a personal relationship with them and my business relationship with them, if I look over the years in the perspective, has been really, really short, you know.
Right.
Many of my business partners now I have had for 3, 4, 5, 6 times longer than my business relationship with them, you know. So it's kind of like I'm pretty sure I will work with them again in the future some way. So if that's in 6 months or 6 years, I don't know. Like I know where we are going and what we are doing and what I am doing. and what I'm not doing, and that's maybe the most important thing,
right?
Because of this period when everybody becomes jaded, you know, a lot of people, what people feel on, I think, is the same as I feel on, like, thing I don't get to do. And it's not like we don't have enough time or anything, it's just like our life becomes so unstructured that it's hard to have time to refocus on new things or put your energy in new things, right? So, for Emil it's a special situation also because I don't know what he and Alina think about. I think they should get married and have kids.
Okay.
I don't know, but I just love them. And they've been talking about maybe relocating and so on. And I think it's more important thing than Weeklin for sure.
Right.
Emil has still his shares in Weeklin. And so it's, no problems there.
Right. So I guess like, in like a one-liner, what would you say? Like, kids, just remember one thing.
Well,
to ensure your people don't get a burnout or something. I don't know. How would you contextualize this burnout?
So I will tell you my problem, or my problems with answering that question, is that when you start a new company, which everyone who starts a new company knows, it's a lot of responsibility, and it's all on you in a way. The founders know that it's on them. You know, if you come to the point that you're not longer involved and some other holding the stick, it's kind of like what I envisioned for Weeklin. I hope that it was kind of, it could be a kind of thing where people change on holding the stick, you know, to drag the company forward. So my founder in Weeklin is Sindre Bush for sure, you know. The first moments where you found a company and you start the company and where you first start to talk about the company is some of the hardest moments. So you have to make people believe in something they never heard about before. And maybe it's very similar to very much else, you know. And you just have to get their attention. And you have to make people believe in it. Also people who want to work in it. So, and that kind of people you want to start up with, like I started up with Indra, that should be someone you really feeling it's worth to sacrifice for. Because it will become times when you don't see eye to eye on what's worth using time, sacrifice time on. And then you have to either make your partners go on your thing, or you just have to go with your partners and sacrifice your time on partners' ideas and partners' time, you know. And when this goes on over years, it can be really tiresome. And especially if you don't have them been a founder from the start and come in a couple of years down the road, and then it could be much easier to quit, of course. You know, it's easier to see life without it. As for a founder, there's no other reality.
So you're in that moment right now, okay, and you're at that peak of the haze, and you're in that sort of burnout mode. And obviously, I guess, like, you have, or I don't know how it is for you, but, like, what do you do on a practical level? Do you distribute, or do you exercise, do you meditate, what is it that you do in order to get through this? How do you keep that rhythm going, especially when it's in high intensity? Because there's a physical aspect as well, where there's your body and there's a rhythm that that needs to be on, and I guess it's the capacity of how much can you take on yourself, and how do you do it, and what do you do?
Well, I don't think I have an answer on that, because I don't think I do the right thing, because if I done, I would do much better. And as I talked about earlier, like, all the things I don't do, which I know I can do, podcast, writing, whatever, you know. The moment I find myself more in balance is the moment I can really, really start to progress. Because I have enough time. I'm just wasting so much time in the between the phases, or doing nothing or whatever. So I want to train, I want to meditate on a regular basis. I do, of course, those things, but not on a regular basis. And I have all the access I want. I have, like, pass on your Northern Light Yoga. I can go and do yoga if I want. Meditation, I have access to free classes during the week. So I have nothing to complain about, you know. But to find that balance, sleep is the only thing I do that I'm really grateful that I'm doing a good way. Like I actually go to bed in a reasonable time. Very normal now for me to go to bed between 10 and 12.
So keeping your rhythm of sleep always intact is, would you say that's a good point?
Yeah, well, that's the best way I found now, because I tell you one thing, like the stress, I feel it becomes way less if I wake up early in the morning and I have my time going to work and so on. Even if it's just like I'm not stressing or running to a meeting and have my time just waiting for the day to start. When I have, when I'm in that mode, my anxiety go way down.
So setting like your morning, like just setting the scene with relaxness and calmness in the morning and getting your sleep patterns right correctly. Yeah, that makes sense. For the most part, like that's when I read about other people sort of being in the haze or storm of something. It's like, okay, get your sleep right. Cause, and then sometimes it's food as well. You can't really manage that. But if you get your sleep right, you can fast as well, right? Have certain moments of setting yourself in certain states by doing little exercises here and there, like for example waking up in the morning and just being relaxed and just being in that state to set the rest of the day for the setting. And that's it, so it makes sense.
Well, I think
what's the big sort of metaphysical sort of philosophical teachings you've gotten this? What has, like, if you want to think about the philosophers who've said shit and dag about these issues that keep on happening, what is it that you have, like, clicked on and epiphanalized and transcended?
Well, I'm starting to more and more to feel like hear a repeat of getting the moment. But not being prepared.
Get in the moment, but not being prepared.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
No, I'm just feeling. When I struggle, when we talked about struggle, when I'm really down, in a way, I think I'm down in a way that. When I hear other people talking about being down, it's not always the same way I can relate to being down. Because for me, it's, I can become very like martyr-y. You understand that?
I feel, but
like,
it's fully
fuck everyone. I'm gonna do this alone. And I fuck you guys, you know, I'm just doing it alone. And when I'm gonna make it, I'm just gonna look at you and yes, I did it, you fucker, you know. So when I'm down, now when I explain that, I forgot what I was supposed to say.
Well, you were saying when you were down in that state and being very low after all this happened, something philosophical you were thinking of.
Yeah, of not being ready and when your chance is there. So it's just about... I think I'm in that part of my phase in my life now. You know, I've been the first 10 years of my business life or entrepreneurial life, if you will call it whatever you want, my chase. It was a chase. My first 10 years was a chase. You know, I was really chasing all opportunities, all everything, all contacts, all relations, blah, 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 blah. I was just... And just felt it was so unfair. Why didn't people see me? Why would... like morons and idiots becomes in position and make a lot of money and do great companies, and there was obviously brain dead, you know, but they were not, of course. That was just my young life and my like enthusiasm and libido, maybe and they've done their job, they put in their job, they've experienced, and now I kind of like find myself in a position where I have a great network, in a super position. I have a great company, I have two great companies which are so full of potential. And
what's the second company?
Björk, the coffee company.
Okay, yeah, because you have a coffee company too.
Yeah.
How's that going? And what is that?
Going good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in the fifth year.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. So we sell a lot of coffee to businesses, B2B, say.
Okay.
So I'm just having like, and my, you know, I've done some recently lecture on innovation and creativity, entrepreneurship, as I do.
That's what I want you to talk about a lot about, because
yeah.
you give a lot of lectures at very big places, and you do.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of people come to fucking see you and
yeah.
listen to what you're saying. First of all, what is all that you do, and what is a thing that you...
I think it's just a fresh, I'm just a fresh air for, or voice for everyone when it comes to creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurship. Because so many people just say the same, and it's kind of like curriculum from their education in a way. And I'm just linking that up to my own experience and using examples. And normally, it's examples of fucking up. You know,
what was the last one that you, what was one of the coolest, greatest ones you did? I've heard you've done it in
the last. The last one
started.
Was the coolest one I ever did.
Okay, what was that?
I can't talk about it.
What?
I'm not allowed to talk about it.
What? You can't say that to the people. The weird.
That's why it's cool.
Okay, well, hold on a second. Okay, what a second? Second coolest thing.
I think it was
Come
very
on,
cool to be on. In Oslo Konserthus on Oda Nätverket, so it's like the female, it's the female IT leaders community of Norway, maybe Nordic, could be Nordic,
but at least
Norway, and it's like brilliant, so it's led by like top professional business women, you know, there's directors of KPMG or all of the biggest companies, you know.
Right.
So it was packed Oslo, because there was like 1,300 people there. And they asked me to come. So it's an inspirational day for the women in IT of Norway. Read on it online. Oda Nätverket.
Yeah, man, you said you would give us the coolest, man. What was it, like the highlight you came? Because, dude, you've told me some things before
that
I've taken into my comedy act, which, by the way, I did a comedy act last night.
I really want to listen to that. Listen to that.
Well, I'm going to do more comedy nights, and I'm going to organize, actually, comedy events myself, where it's a little bit more closed, because I want to sort of integrate parts of
bad words.
Yeah, definitely that, because I'm gonna have a hate speech day where people come in and test racism, test out sexism, and you have those audiences that are from that sex or that race, let's say African American audience members with their consent coming in, and a bunch of white people. And this is an idea that was stemmed in America, but it's so fucking nuts over there right now that they don't have an actual hub they can do this safely in, if you will, or it's so underground that nobody on the internet knows about it. So I want to create a semi above the ground in Norway, a safe hub for comedians to come in a closed environment. First of all, do that, and second of all, you know, be free to use whatever they want to use at the time as audience members.
For comedy.
For the purpose of comedy, and make that friendly zone. And for the time being, that has to be a little close-up thing. But anyways, holy, let's not go there, what we were talking about. You were talking about the fact that I use some skills of yours, man, like going on stage and provoking and saying some things. What was one of the moments... I guess the church, this church story was very cool. Where you gave you went to church and gave a presentation there about something where you provoked those people, but in a way that was playful.
Yeah.
That was a very good sort of. What was that?
That wasn't a church. It was a conference for It was a business, sustainable business conference.
Right.
But it was facilitated by the Christians from Norway in a way. Let's say as that, some kind of foundation which is Christian.
Right.
So it was kind of like life values, at least. If not every one of them were Christian, one of them was very conscious on their own life values and their own life belief in a way. Maybe that's too generalizing, but it's kind of like how it was. There's a lot of organization, really great organizations there. So we talked a little bit about Wheatland. Modern slavery was one of the themes.
Okay, so what was it? What did you say?
I don't remember what I said on that because it was. I remember I told you right after it happened, so you maybe can remember better than me. But I'm not afraid of provoking. I'm not trying to provoke just to provoke, but if I'm talking and it's not provocative in some way or just provoke your own thoughts or belief, it's kind of like go without saying, then why say it? Why talk about it?
Have you ever provoked in a way that it has backfired and you've been kind of like, oh shit, maybe what the fuck, dude?
I'm very good at like, I have no problem with their interaction. So if someone kind of like gives something to me back, I have the answer ready. So where it helped me the most, my communication skills in a way, is kind of like business meeting, investors meeting, because normally I have to go in and feel like a little girl, you know. For me, it's kind of like the other way around. I'm just hoping. For me, it's like a battlefield where I'm just like hoping someone will dare to come out anyway.
So what is it?
Rhetoric or
so what has that ever happened where somebody's just like, "What the fuck, Kim? What the hell are you talking about?" Okay,
I remember when we won Angel Challenge. So Angel Challenge was like, it was 80 companies. This was in 2016, I think. 80 of the most exciting companies in Norway, startups in Norway,
right?
Sort of say, which hasn't come above a certain level. It was an angel level seed investment, and then I kind of like interviewed 80 companies and reached to 20, which they invited in for 2 days. And the first day, the 20 should go to 10. Second day, the 10 should go to 5. And then you had like a 5-week due diligence where the 5 companies just got investigated by the investors, or a due diligence as they call it. And then we had like in all those 5 weeks we had like go-ins to the investors where they as a group kind of like hit us with questions.
Right.
And then someone asked me something, and then I just started talking. My weakness is that sometimes when I start talking, is that I don't really give you an answer on a question. I start to talk about a lot of other perspective that is in the same category, you know?
Right.
So then after that, he said like, "Well, now I think you're getting like one of the investors like in the back with a kind of loud mouth." Shouted like, "You're getting so cheap away. This is not a good answer." Blah 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 blah. I don't remember really what he said, but I remember that I answered him in such a way that he shut up and...
what was it?
I don't really remember, but it was on point.
He gave it a little meta-contextualization. It's like, "Hey, sir, you Jimmy Joe hit the blow?"
Yeah, it was... you know, my problem with investors in that round is that they were thinking like VC investors. That's venture capitalist investors. That they kind of like throw $5 million there, $10 million, $100 million, blah blah blah. But this was like, this is a angel round, you know. It's kind of like you have to, you don't know, you just have to see, look at the company, look at the people, and assess. So you can't sit and ask question like, "Is Coca-Cola?" You're asking, you know. Of course, you should have levels, but some things are more important in some phases than others.
Okay, right.
So, well.
Shit, man. Sounds intense, dog. Everything we've been going through.
Just for your story, because I feel like that's what you kind of like you're fishing after.
What?
I mean, I was on a debate on the IKT Norge, that was last year, 2 years ago now. And it was like about the future of IT in Norway, something like that. No, what? How is it standing? All the politicians was there. Erna Solberg, the prime minister, was against Jonas Gahr Støre and so on. And they discussed and debated all day about what about self-driving buses and technology and all and whatever, right? And I was there in a debate in a panel debating politicians as such on like the future of labor, I guess, and the future of labor laws, I guess. And I remember, because I was really on fire and they were really like normal and the crowd just reacted so immense. They were like, after I had my lines, they were like clapping. It was like crazy.
What was it you said?
No, I don't remember all the arguments, but one thing I said is that I'm not sitting here and trying to learn my father to fuck.
God dang, dude.
Yeah.
Was that to the older generation of people like companies?
Yeah.
Was the line, keep saying it again?
Sorry?
Say it again.
I said some more, but I said, like, I'm not sitting here and trying to learn my father to fuck.
God damn right, man.
I sit at Jahara, probably a lot of farming in Krulle.
That you hear that prime minister, no way you hear that police institution and health institution, but no, I'm just kidding, no, the sociology minister, good to me. They were the sponsors of last week's podcast.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, so I don't think I have so many good stories of my talks, but when I have a good talk, it's a good moment, you know, and it's really good. And the last talk I had, which I can't talk about, was an exciting talk, but it was a really good moment. It was a really good talk, and kind of like got the people moved. And what's really inspiring with the talks is to see people just break out of their old perspective for a bit and just have like an epiphany of like a whole new way of thinking around one topic or issue or business or market.
Sounds like a very integrated industry, whatever it is, something that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds very integrated, like health or health department or economy department or something.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're not allowed to say it, but I'm just thinking out loud here just for assumptions.
Yeah.
Sounds like very... Yeah. So let's just say there's a heavy institution that's been going on with the same mentality for many, many years, and you're able to sort of tap them out of that experience and show that same experience from a different angle.
Yeah, and you know, my interest of holding talks and lecture is also from my interest in studying and learning new stuff. So
right.
So whenever I learn myself, I try to kind of like learning the things I like. I try to integrate.
Right.
And I talk a lot about epistemology, which is the words and like symbolic meaning of words, and you know.
What was it in
courage?
Epistemology.
Yeah.
Epistemology.
Yes, it is.
That's like the dictionary of what? Everything.
No, it will. I'm not sure of definition, but it's like the symbol of the words and
right, it's, oh, okay.
The study of the definitions.
Roots,
yes.
Of the root,
yeah,
of the word. So it's so this word means this, that meant this, that meant this, and
yes.
Like go down to the...
Like courage. I talked with you about courage many times. It's from courage, old French, meaning heart. You know?
Can you remind me of that again? Just
courage is from old French,
okay.
Courage, and that means one thing, and that's heart. So when you see in the... language, courage being used, or if you want to start to use it better yourself. You know, I believe in the, you know, I kind of like believe in alchemy around my words and the power of the true words. So the better I can use the words the more real will they affect in the life I live, you know.
Right.
A ripple effect in the right intention of
right,
the meaning.
Right, right.
So courage is heart. And I think that's I think it's kind of like important to visualize the definition and the meaning of the words in a way.
Right. God damn.
Mm. Same with religion, you know, which comes from Latin religare, which means go in unity with what? We don't know. It just means go in unity with. Yoga means, is from Sanskrit and mean link connection or going in unity with. So it's kind of like, and just to understand that word just open up so many perspective, because in our secular world, religion is always, we talk about, we are in Norway and it's a free liberal country, but if we talk about, just mention religion or God, I think 70-80%, I'm not sure, but too many people would just have like a blank curtain come over the face, like no, or laugh a little bit, or not even really invested themselves in what the words or the meaning is, you know. It's like the Hawaiian tribe quote, which saying like what's true is measured by how effective it is. So if you see things stand the test of time, it's kind of like a very strong proof of the trueness in it. Pyramid is a good example. How true are they? You know, what are they?
Right.
And holy books. Holy books are, why is those books kept for so many centuries? You know, it's kind of stupid to believe that there are people there also. I just want to keep this book because someone in my family tree said it to them. No, it's like giving meaning and value for new generation after generation after generation, so they keep it. Keep it and keep it. So I just try to. That's. I think maybe that's why people like to listen to my talks. It's because I kind of like demolish old perspective just by throwing in a bunch of new ones.
right.
And I'm
right,
not
right.
trying to show a right perspective, because I don't know. I'm just studying all this stuff myself and trying to figure out, but by studying and by reflecting upon them in daily life and in business life, you can just start to find gems of meaning, you know, like
is that what entrepreneurship means, kind of, where you find like fucking perspectives in certain areas and certain
I'm not sure what what's the right definition of entrepreneurship, but I know the right definition of invention is or to innovate is to oppdage. What's the words in English?
Discover.
Discover. I'm not even sure that's the right word, but it's. Well, the definition of invention, you should start look this up. It's about revealing.
Jamie.
It's revealing.
Yeah.
So it's already there, in other words.
Right. It's already there. It's observed.
No, I think it's just...
Okay, yeah.
For the sake of the conversation, let's say revealing. You know?
God damn.
So an invention is revealing. So when you invent something, it's not... In a secular world, and secular, the definition of that word is material. Materialist. You know, I have my world, my perspective, you have your world, your perspective. And I understand that and I acknowledge that you have another perspective and another worldview of me than me. If we don't can agree on anything of that, we become secular and we only agree on what's material. Yes, this is a lamp. Okay, I agree
right.
This is a lamp. This is a recorder. Yes, I agree. This is a recorder. This is a door. I agree. This is a door. This is fun. No, you're not sure you're agreeing on that because, you know... You're not that spiritual.
This is fun, General. Yeah, well, what do you think about that? You know, the fact that we, for example, this is real because you and I agree, or is this here and real because it just is real in here? Or do we agree that it is real in here?
Well, it's real. It's real if you think it's real and I don't think it's real. I would steal from my objective mind and say, well, then it's real because you, I acknowledge your being experience, which Aristoteles would say then your own experience. It's not science. Science is the most likely outcome, you know. So science is if most of people who come in here said, yes, this is real.
Right.
In the old rhetorics, that's kind of science. But if you see now this is pink, and I experience this as a dark brown, and if you experience it pink, it's still your being experience, so it's still true.
So what is that, like, in a, in the bigger sense, if 50%, or like, not 50%, 1/7 or 1/8 of the world is saying the earth is flat, and then it becomes 50-50, what happens then?
I acknowledge that that's their being experience. If they experience the earth as flat, but I don't think so many of them experience it as flat. I think it's more like a, it's kind of like an offspring of a rational secular world almost.
Right. That's right, how right, I think. Right. Okay.
It's an offspring of have to be materialist, but we have this issue about, you know, I think it's kind of like trapped in that dimension. Because if you take it up to the spiritual dimension, like, why not? You can have the third flat, why not? No.
Right.
It's kind of like, so it's kind of like trapped with logos and...
Do you think if everybody agrees upon the earth being flat, it just like, poop, becomes flat? Or how does that...
That's a really interesting idea. Because, of course, in my mind, I was in, no, of course, why not? But I've just been so much more aware of the... of the... Do you know this thing with the emerald tablets, you know, the hermetic rules?
No.
And we talked about this before, but it's kind of like alchemy and hermetic rules. They're kind of like the wise books of hermetic rules. And I talk so much about it. Just think about it, like, if you want to, you can make whatever you want with your mind. That's kind of trippy, because if you can imagine it, you can actually build it. And it's
right.
Just a time and your commitment and your religion, if you will, your way to your goal.
Do you think that was the story of Babylon, in a way?
Yeah.
Where people just believed, like, fuck, we can reach the heavens, and then God was like, oh shit, they believe this, then it's gonna happen.
It was almost like a rational offspring again, like a offspring of secular and rational thoughts, almost. No, I'm not sure. But something like that.
That's weird, right? Because that was like one of like in the Bible, that was one of the pinnacle moments of human beings. That was one of those moments where like it was just perfection, and they were just like, "We can fucking do this. We are fucking
perfect.
That good. We're perfect. We can do this." And they were going so fast, and God was just like, "Fuck no! This is not. You're not ready for it yet. Whatever the fuck that thing is." It's just like, doof, cut that power off, and just said, no, you gotta mellow, in a mellow way, like, savor this somehow. I don't know why. What do you think? In a sense, did God wanted us to savor this entire notion of building things instead of just like, doof, agreeing and being perfect and doom.
Yeah,
seems like
I
didn't want the perfection thing going.
Well, I think like it's like a beautiful dancing balance, because I think the people who create are addicted of creating and building and want more, and they are absolutely vital if you want to create anything at all. Even Karl Marx said that, like, we need to see the true value of the entrepreneur in the society, the people who create, you know, creates new ideas, new workplaces, and so on. And Ayn Rand say that the people who create, they don't get paid proportionally. Like the people in the factory, they get paid proportionally because they don't, or a little less than proportionally, they don't use any of their brain. They're just like machines. But the people who create big stuff, they never get paid proportionally in their life, according to Ayn Rand.
Right. And what does that mean in the sort of bigger scheme of it?
Well, I don't know. I just think that it means that we all have our part. I think that's the meaning of it, you know. So if you want, if you want to enter, if the world is entering in a time of a lot of progression, you have to have a lot of progressive people in that world, or just at least some, you know. And you can't just stop that progression, you know. So then you're almost the world kind of like develop itself in cycles, in a way like the American presidency. You know,
right.
Obama first, and then all over to Trump. And what's next? You know,
commerce or state probably again.
Yeah, you don't see. I think Trump will win again because you don't see like what the natural next would be like. Really intelligent man or woman in the 30s who just like got things straight and just like bam, like. Barack Obama, just like more green, more true, more solidarity, more like revolutionary.
Right.
It was like it's, people would almost expect that after Trump, right?
Right. Okay, shit.
So,
so what is the lesson here? Be more extravagant and crazy?
I think the most best lesson is to adapt and to trust in yourself, and going back to what I was thinking when all the thing was like happening around me, it was kind of like cutting off all lifelines in a way. And it, for me, is the best way to have control, you know, because I do believe that the world moving forward going get into chaos. I think we are in chaos already, and I'm not meaning like the world's going under or whatever, but of course, like if it all, Norway's going to stop the oil, which almost everyone wants, at least from a green perspective, you know?
Right.
What should we do then? It's not automatic that we should continue to be the richest. So what do happen if we...
Yeah, what does happen?
What does
now?
Happen if Norway
fuck,
come
dude.
In a social status as Lithuania?
What
Nothing
the,
else, just the social status of Lithuania, and money and the economy as Lithuania. And Lithuania is not a shit country. I'm not saying it's a normal good country.
Right.
I'm just saying that in Norway and the Nordic, we have no idea what kind of place we are, where we are placed in the world, our social status, our richness. What happened? I think it will be a life crisis of the country.
Yeah, because like, this is my question all the time, dude. And like, okay, so how long has it gone? Okay, so it's gone. We'll go for maximum another like 10, 15 minutes.
Mm.
But one of the biggest things that I'm always thinking about Norway is that, okay, so we're running our economy on oil, right?
Mm.
And there is a big incubation happening even in Norway. Sweden is fucking fully incubated away from petroleum and shit. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they're saying.
They're doing a lot. They have also nuclear reactions.
Right. So they're doing that over there. And it seems like a global, especially with Germany, Switzerland, they're fucking hammering it out like nobody's business. So my curiosity in the middle of this is like Norway's main economy, and being that they're socialist and welfareist, giving money to fuckers like me and so many other people, and pretty much being a mommy and daddy for people like me and a lot of other people, what's going to happen when that sort of yearning for oil disappears to this country?
So normally I don't think you will have a big problem, but I think you will have a big problem in Norway because everyone is so fucking entitled in Norway. So I think everybody... You know, it wasn't on the front page today of VG or Dagbladet. This is how you pay the least tax. I think it was on the front page.
What was that? I didn't see that.
On the national newspaper.
Shit.
You know, this is how you can pay the least tax. And you find a bunch of articles like that. But this is what we're talking about.
Why would they do that?
But this is quite normal. Everybody talking about how can you cut their tax and all that
thing.
But
why is that a thing if we're just 4 million people?
And we're also the richest in the world.
We are the richest in the world.
Yeah, so we are sitting like, if we're not the one, we are about amongst the top 3 richest countries in the world. Okay.
Next to like Dubai and all these fucking Singaporean people, perhaps, I don't know.
No, we're much richer than that. The richness is so divided there, you know.
Okay,
Depend on what list you're looking at. Also,
mm-hmm.
when you look at like life standard and BNP.
Yeah, we're talking about as a whole of a country.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're talking about the richest people in the world, Norwegian, sitting and trying to squeeze their tax to the best way. And of course, everyone would do it, you could say, but it's about turning ourselves around and look at our own responsibility. And then I think we would start to look at the state as something we all want to contribute to build strong.
Right.
You know, it's a structure, it's a system. I invest in this system because it's my insurance if I become sick or my kids become sick or whatever, the state will take care of it. But it's not like that. The mindset, that's what I think is dangerous with Norway. So the mindset is, how can I get the most out of it? I don't believe for one second that someone losing a job in director position at Aker Brygge or out at Fornebu will turn up a knob and the day after, like, how can I help now paying back whatever I should get in dog pangar or whatever, you know.
Right.
It's not true for me, it's not true for you, it's not true for the director at Aker Brygge. So how can we turn that around? You know, it's like the New Deal of America.
And
know?
Hey, I gotta say this, me personally, dude, I'm getting money from NAV and Sosialtjenesten, and in all this, and I've been doing this for 2 years now, dude, and they have been supporting me. Every single time I've asked them, and honestly, genuinely, my conclusion at this point in my life is that the reason why I'm taking money from them is because I have set my mindset to be like that.
Mm.
And I see that I'm in this very strange zone, and like in a number in the nuance of numbers that's creating this big like effect that could be in a consequence very bad, which is that I'm just taking and I've created a mindset that this is how it is. And therefore, that's how it's functioning. And it's sort of in my head that I cannot, or the system will not change until I change my behavior with the system. And it's so funny because I'm in this loop of getting money from them, and I kind of need it, whatever the fuck that means. But I don't know if that's me like saying I need it or I want it. Is there a solution I can come up with? And it makes me go into big conundrums like, holy shit, this is gonna this might switch around against my own fucking face fast. And for everybody else, especially with all the debts and all the loans, and at the same time NAV and Sosialtjenesten is just giving out money, dog paying it to the ones who get unemployed but quit their jobs or go on sick leave. And it all, to me, it seems like it's a mindset thing that is for the most part with people. How do you do that? How do you switch that entire... have you thought about, like, okay,
yeah,
is this something you guys talk about?
Like, I think a lot about it, but that's because I'm, like, so into rhetoric and great leaders and speeches, you know? Because you have had men and women who have, like, made big groups of people believe in something.
Right.
Something abstract. Something not tangible. And actually act upon it, and that's super powerful. And I understand. I'm scratching the surface of understanding the dynamics because I'm an entrepreneur and done entrepreneurship for 15 years. I've gotten people to invest in me. I get people to work for me, and I have gotten people to buy from me. So it's kind of like. That's why it's intrigued me so much how these great leaders do it, and that's also what led me into philosophy and so on, because I saw like the greatest people and the greatest leaders, they have a great set of values, you know, and they just hold on to that. It's like their center, their core of their religion, you know.
Right.
And then you work on that,
and
if that's good, you can use it as strong as you want to, in a way, and it will impact people in a real way, because you can almost connect with the Atman, in a way, you know.
What's Atman?
Your true ego, your true self in Hinduism, because you communicate both ethos, pathos, and logos, the rationally, but you can also hear the character, you can see and hear and understand the character that communicates, and you can contextualize it in a way, you know. That I believe that's what's make Donald Trump so strong, don't matter if he is right or wrong. You can see his character. He's a character, you know.
It's a real character. It's the energy that oozes.
Like, this is his belief set, and like you can see, he's just he believe in his fucked up belief set. That's how.
And therefore, it is the way it is.
Super powerful. Yeah. Super powerful.
So, in a sense, like, okay, so now.
We're gonna end it.
Yeah, I'm gonna end it soon, but before we end it, what is that one thing you would give to the Norwegian people who are in this cycle, who should be fucking thinking about you bastards? Look at this right now. Should be thinking about the fact that we are switching away from oil, and this country is based on oil. And it's all in people's mindset. What is that one thing you could tell people to change in their mindset in order to make this mother lord a mighty country of ours better?
Well, I think it's taking ownership of your own life and experience. Something I try to do. I'm not an expert at all. And I heard, I watched Trygdekontoret the other day. It was really good about mental health. And one of the guys there who had like a lot of... sickness in mental health, he said, like, it helped me a lot that when I got this epiphany that it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility to do something with it. And that just really hit home with me. Like, I think that's
God damn. So it's not my fault the way things are right now, but still at the same time it is my responsibility to make something happen.
Yeah, it's only your responsibility to do something with your situation,
especially once you understand the situation. And for the most people, this is not a blaming, because I'm in the same thing. I'm doing the same thing. It's just understanding, and I guess then after that, then we should act responsible. What do you think that responsibility... That I guess it's a whole thing, right? It's like...
It's none... Like, none in Norway or in the world, as we see now, is like a enlightened environmental being, you know?
Right, like
there's no
Norway.
There's no guru out there like, this is how we are really environmental. That's my point. So my point is like, we all... You can say as much as you want, like, I'm really green and conscious... But you are for sure failing at some point. So that comes our responsibility again to enlighten ourselves on the situation. You know, be more aware consumers, maybe. Don't consume as much. And it's good for so much. You know, we have this economy now, which is kind of like built into being sixth gear and bam. So I think we need to slow down. And that will hit the economy, but maybe we can hit it home to a more sustainable economy.
Sustainability, basically.
Instead of a consumer based all the time. You know, it's a good thing. Like, you see North Face now doing the jackets. That's the thing, that started to sell old jackets repaired. Was it North Face? I'm not sure. But you see the Audi commercial on TV. There's a guy like sitting in a new Audi, and then a woman comes like, where is the used car? He's like, this is the used car. And it's like Audi taking like old cars, refurbished and start to sell. It's like, so that's like a really, really good incentives. Because it's so symbolic, those actions. And I promise you this Audi thing, it's not like they invented this idea. It's of course based on something a bicycle shop did that, and the creative company who do the ad for Audi. So, oh, we should do like bum 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 or something like that.
Well, I just want to specify to people who don't know what we're talking about. In America, usually commonly, the way their economy and production works is what called linear, where they just make and make and make, and on the way, whatever it is, they just chuck it away and they still keep on making and producing. Whereas in what you're talking about right now is you're making, but at the same time, you're considering the parts that you've made and taking it back into a circulation,
so
in a way, and giving it.
Yeah, so you can see the world are shifting to a more sustainable way, in a way that they want to have longer lifetime value on their products.
Right.
You know, it's obviously now many companies who understand they can't have this high sale pace. Just think about the TVs, home TVs, the last 10 or 15 years. You know, when I was little, it was like when you changed out your TV after 5 or 7 or 10 years, you know, now it's like so many TVs.
Right.
I have had so many TVs in just my adult age. It's right. Ridiculous.
The same thing with phones, right? You just and then chuck it away.
And that's like super ridiculous. And you go around and buy like super expensive phone and it don't really work. And I'm saying they don't really work. The last years I've changed my front on the, my glass on the phone 3 times. And people can say, well, then you like not looking good careful. It's a phone. Like, honestly, it's
well,
a phone.
It's, but now
and,
as
and
well...
And it's cost, like, almost 10,000 knock, you know. It's, like, ridiculous. Why can't we have, like... So, the mindset of the culture and so on is... It's
because we know we can create phones that are just perfectly fine to the max of their abilities. And to the point you can't break it, you can't do shit, you can't burn it, you can drive on it, you can chuck it in the middle of the fucking core of the center of the earth... Nothing. We have that capacity.
Yeah.
We don't do it.
And we can make phone, and we can standardize it. We can say to all phone producers, we need the battery is going to be this standard, and some going to be rebels and start another standard. Okay, but you can standardize so much thing. You know, you have those this a couple of phone brands, and I've actually been thinking about getting one that where they kind of like sell the phones, and you can change all the parts yourself.
Right.
Have you seen that?
No.
It's kind of
I've heard about the kangaroo thing, or no, the English.
Sure.
I don't know, but I know I've heard about phones that get recycled through a company a bunch of times, and then the story behind it is also.
Oh.
But that's it. But I've also heard a little bit about. I've seen my friend have this phone where you can just take out parts, every part. But I don't know what is that.
Maybe that one.
Okay, and that's my friend actually, she said the same thing, that like, yo, if you get this, you can maximize it to the point where this is the maximum you can get out of touchscreen.
And here's another thing that, which is really interesting if you talk about leaders getting to moves to people to do stuff, you know, and why isn't that then that phone which you can take out each and every part? When I saw my friend presented it, there was a lot of people there and they were like, whoa, cool. You know, it's really in the side guys, and but I haven't seen many of them. It's rarely I heard about them. It's something about communication then, or something about the design, or how to, well, let's say communicate, how to sell them, how to present it. And it's kind of it's very interesting.
Well, holy shit, you just gave me the idea, because like one of the things I want to do for myself is A, become more independent, in a sense, just tap away from as many industries as I can and just create my own things and make my own sort of viable system that works. So for example, one of the things I did on the last episode, I just, because data being used in Facebook and Google and yada yada yada, people talking about all the time that I post my content and then the fucking advertisers are stealing your data, and I never knew what that meant until I went on the Steemit website, which is a social media platform on blockchain, and I went on DTube, which is also a decentralized platform. That's kind of like YouTube, but what the difference is now is because there are no humans in the middle taking or like having the initiation to take your data, right? Then it will be a direct communication of your data, and therefore you have full control of your data. In a practical term, if I post a picture on Instagram, I don't know how many thousands of views you need in order to get. Or likes you need in order to get some money out of it, but on a decentralized platform like Steemit, you can post a picture, and for every single view, you'll get a Steem token, which is real money. And in that sense, I've also realized, okay, so what is it that I can do as well to like reduce my consumption and also become more independent with my, like, for example, technological aspects, like we're talking about right now, getting a phone where I don't need to fucking chuck away and go back to the same company and blindly get something that I have no idea what the fuck is going on, but rather be in the actual production of getting things that I maneuver and put together myself. And what I feel like you're just saying right now, I'm going to mention this and have this, and I think everybody else do it. And for the audience, if you guys have any ideas or things that really could help with this, especially Norway, right? Norwegians, if you have ideas of how to reduce consumption, become more independent in that sense, please share it, and I will fucking sponsor it in this podcast for you because I love it. That's what we're doing. And that's the only time I'm going to sponsor and advertise, tailored advertise, that really means something to me, which is to reduce consumption, become more independent. And that's it.
That's it.
Fucking high five,
Kim. You fucking nailed it.
Thank you, sir, for
a new episode.
Yeah, dude, this is the best episode I've done. And I've...
Which episode number is it?
It's number 12, this one. And it will be the first episode that's going to be on video camera. So thank you, Benjamin. I love you, dog. And thank you for the introduction on the piano. I'm going to do a podcast with him. He's a brilliant kid, dude. He's so fucking talented in music, why not? If you want to, play it a little bit in the background. We're ending the podcast, buddy. And yeah, that's it, Kim. Thank you very much for doing this. And, dude, honestly... Saying that this is my favorite. This is the one that I just said, like, yeah, I want to be a little sober. I want to be a little bit in place and do this properly instead of timing and a frame.
Nice.
And so thank you for sharing this experience with you. It was very fun.
Let's hear what the band has to say.
Right? The band, should I just take it to the camera?
Just,
okay.
Almost like turn us to the scene.
Yeah, right. You know what? Let me just take the fucking microphone and the camera. Kim, can I give you a little hug, bro?
Yeah, for sure.
Fuck yeah, bro.
Fuck yeah,
bro. Oh, yeah. Those are probably like...
Well, it's cool because I didn't really... It was structured, but like... Improvised structure. You know what I mean? That's right, folks. We wizards in the house. You just listened to the 12th episode with me and Kim Hoggison and, of course, Benjamin. Benjamin Linus? No, the Benjamin fucking prodigy of music. That's right, folks. Look at the way we're going to end this podcast, because this is the way we love our audience. So tune into the next episode, which I don't know what it's going to be about, but it don't matter, because it's automatically in the present moment, unknowingly, it's just getting better. So folks, I'll leave you with Benjamin.
Yeah.
Goddamn right, Benjamin. Hit it to him.
So did you have a good podcast?
Goddamn right, we had a good podcast.
Did you talk about all the right stuff?
We're talking all about the right stuff, baby.
Right stuff, yeah.
Right stuff, baby, mate.
Ooh, the alt right stuff.
Goddamn right,
right. The alt right stuff?
The alt right stuff.
Oh, the alt right now.
Dirty now, southern way.
Yeah.
Come on, baby.
Dirty now in the southern way?
Yeah. All
right, fine. So I married my cousin when I was 12,
because
there was nothing else to do.
Bow.
Yeah.
Give it up, people, to Benjamin.
Now my whole family.
Oops, shit.
Oh, the camera.
Now my whole family.
Oops.
Yeah, well, that's it for that.
That's it for
that. Name for that, and no, you keep on going, Benjamin. This is amazing.
My whole family is filled with ancestry.
God damn right, white people, Caucasians in the house, damn dealers.
For centuries, we only fucked ourselves.
Woo, you got a pretty mouth, boy.
Nobody would fuck anybody else.
Let me make you squeal like a pig now.
So let's have all the money and the wealth.
Money in the world. Linear economy and circular.
With our cousins and our brothers in hell.
That's right, you Norwegian bastards.
I don't know. Cause incest is bad.
And it's common in Norway too.
And it's most likely the reason why we are here.
Jiminy Bob, we're wizards in a motherfucking house.
It all started in BC 2012. Well, the monkeys started fucking themselves.
Goddamn right, and there were Norwegians too.
And Norwegians too. We were
Norwegian monkeys
back then. Norwegian monkeys,
even doing incest back in the days before Adam and Eve.
It was snow monkeys.
Goddamn right, Benjamin.
And then for some reason, we fucking invented money, and here we fucking are.
And talking to Kim about it all.
Oh, it was just so much easier.
Right.
When all I had to do was raise my chickens. Chicken, only to go pay my taxes. Oh. I had no interest in love, cause it was plenty of.
God damn right, Benjamin, that was good. Huh? And that is, in fact, the end of it all, Benjamin. Play it all. Bang, you weird wizards, mother lord, almighty. Thank you, Benjamin. Hi, the motherfucker. Bye. Take care, weird wizard audience, and I'll see you next episode.